Good morning. Does anyone here, I can't see without my glasses, know what the Oxford Dictionary Word of the Year is for 2024? It's brain rot. It's defined as the supposed deterioration of a person's mental or intellectual state, especially due to overconsumption of material, particularly online content. It feels both a little amusing and unsettling. Today, we find ourselves in a unique moment, nestled between the quiet reflection of winter solstice and the impending inauguration of President Trump. Amid these transitions, we celebrate the holidays, we welcome a new year, and navigate a sea of uncertainty, anxiety-laden headlines, and the emotional whirls of holiday busyness. Let's explore how we can ground ourselves in the present, sustaining our spirits and reclaiming our sense of agency in this dynamic and complex time. Recently, I came across an article for journalists titled, "Fear Headlines: Capitalize on the Most Primitive Emotion." It explained, fear is the oldest and strongest emotion of humanity and described fear as the ultimate tool for grabbing attention. It advised writers It advised writers to sprinkle headlines with words like beware, warning, risk, mistakes, and regret to activate a reader's most primal instincts. This technique plays into our evolutionary wiring. Fear was once essential for survival, a signal to fight or flee. But in today's world, fear often operates in the realm of perceived danger rather than actual threats, leaving us in a constant state of heightened vigilance. We've lived through so many experiences where the media told us there was impending doom and disaster, only to find the outcomes weren't actually as catastrophic as predicted. Do you remember Y2K? In 1999, we were warned of catastrophic computer failures at the turn of the millennium. There were grim headlines predicting chaos, power outages, prison gates swinging open, planes grounded mid-air. Then midnight struck, and almost nothing happened. Thanks to preparation by IT teams globally, the transition to the year 2000 was mostly uneventful, with only minor isolated issues. In the end, dire predictions fizzled into nothingness. In our lifetimes, we've lived through so many news cycles and predictions that the sky was falling. Do you remember the killer bee hysteria of the 70s and 80s? Headlines predicted widespread deaths and devastation, but their impact was minimal, with only localized incidents. Or how about the 2016 Brexit predictions of immediate economic collapse and chaos? While Brexit brought challenges, the catastrophic collapse never happened. Media regularly sensationalizes natural disasters and crises, running around-the-clock coverage, amplifying anxiety, and causing disaster fatigue. Today, we're bombarded by information at a pace that our nervous systems were never designed to handle, and we are being fed a steady diet of messages to keep us afraid. Research from the University of California, San Diego estimates that the average person processes 74 gigabytes of information daily. That's equivalent to 16 full-length movies. Much of this is news, often negative, leading to heightened anxiety, depression, and even PTSD-like symptoms. For our younger generations, the effects are even more pronounced. The CDC recently reported that 40% of high school students feel persistently sad or hopeless, with alarming rates of suicidal ideation. Perhaps it's time we really consider taking our power back. How do we do that? We practice presence. Presence is about so much more than stillness or inner calm, although those are certainly significant. It's a quality that conveys a deep level of connection with one's higher self and also with the higher self of the other. The channel of communication that opens up in that higher connection has real meaning. Presence is achieved through practice, and it's about living in the here and the now. It's about discernment and radical acceptance. It's about regulating our emotions and not allowing our peace to be disturbed. It's about living life focused on what is truly important. How many of you know the Serenity Prayer? If you do, say it with me. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. We can't control what the media sells us, and we can't even control which political party in our country is in power. But we can control what we consume and how we respond. We can choose presence over panic. We can prioritize what truly really matters: time with loved ones, small acts of kindness, and the creation of moments filled with meaning and joy. We can even prioritize acceptance and being a good neighbor, and we can be intentional in our efforts to not see others as separate from us. I lived in Southern Oregon for 2.5 years and spent most of the COVID lockdown there. I moved from the rat race of Los Angeles into a little 1920s farmhouse that I just loved. I found myself in a land where I was different. Dan, my neighbor across the street from me, had a big Trump banner hanging on his fence right next to his big red pickup truck. And I looked out my front window, and there it was in big block letters right in front of me. Dan loved beer and seemed to have a hobby of collecting beer cans. He had amassed quite an impressive collection in his backyard. Not long after meeting Dan from across the street, I soon met next door Dan. There I was, just arriving across state lines with California license plates on the front and back of my rear-wheel drive SUV, which is not so funny here, but it's pretty funny in Oregon. I'm not sure if it was the yoga pants or the trans teenager in tow or the California license plates, but somehow it was apparent I was a Californian. One afternoon, I encountered next door Dan, and we chatted along our property lines. He was wheelchair bound and explained that he had become a paraplegic due to a skiing accident. He was grumpy, and he made it clear he didn't like Californians. He was mad that at an arborist's recommendation, I had cut down a sick willow tree on my property that was dangerously hanging over the top of his house. Dan explained to me that it was my fault his electricity bill was going to go up and didn't seem to appreciate the gesture to save his house from being crushed by my tree. As he went to go into his house, I heard him say, "You'll see me out in the front yard sometimes, naked." I shook my head and said to myself, I surely must have misunderstood what he said. So I waved and I went into my house, and sure enough, the next morning, standing in my kitchen window, drinking coffee, I look up and there was Dan in his wheelchair, butt naked from the waist down. I realized in that moment I had heard him right. He wheeled across his front lawn and across the street to the mailbox, grabbed his mail, and wheeled himself back inside. And I shook my head, realizing I am no longer in Los Angeles. Camille, at the time, recently graduated from high school, that's my kiddo for those who don't know, asked if we could hang an LGBTQIA banner on our fence in front of our house. And I told him no. I didn't want to start a war with our neighbors. I told him instead that I wanted to prove to these two men that we were worth knowing and that we were good neighbors in spite of being different from them. The holidays came, and I baked cookies, and I took them to their front doors. And when I knocked on next door Dan's front door, no one answered. So I left a note on top of the cookies with holiday greetings and my phone number. The next day, I got a text that read, "Thank you for the cookies, but I don't eat junk." I laughed, and I replied, "I understand. Please pass them along to a friend." From time to time, I'd go to Dan's door and bring him a meal or some baked goods, and he went from being grumpy and started chatting with me when I would come in from work. Before Camille and I eventually moved back to California, Dan had begun to share his life story with me, including the difficulties he experienced in dealing with all the physical complications of his paralysis. He had been an avid athlete whose life had been changed in an instant. He explained that the nudity was due to the difficulties of toileting, bathing, and clothing himself without help, and some days his aid didn't come. One day, across the street, Dan flagged me down when I drove up in my driveway, and he said, "I think I need some help. I accidentally stabbed myself." He was holding his wrist. I asked him to let me see the cut, so he took the pressure off his wrist, and a spout of blood started shooting into the air with each beat of his heart. So I ran inside in a panic. I grabbed a towel, and I told him, "I'm calling 911 or taking you to the ER right now. Choose." He asked me to take him to the ER. It was actually only a few blocks away. And by the time we arrived, there was blood all over both of us and my car. I sat in the ER with him until his sister arrived, and after the crisis, he later had explained he had a fishing knife in between the seats of his truck, and he had reached in to get something, and he hit the tip of the knife with his wrist. And from then forward, Dan came across the street, and we'd chat in the lawn. He'd make me laugh with some of his antics and political viewpoints, but he was no longer the guy with the Trump banner. He was my neighbor, and I was no longer that woman from California. I was Glenda. He never did get my name right, but I was okay with that. We were no longer defined by where we were from or who we voted for. We were defined by our efforts to build meaningful connection and to show up for each other. We had crossed the divide of differences and treated each other with kindness. We were no longer others. We were neighbors. Over COVID, I could reach out to both Dans and knew they would show up for me. I knew that about all of my neighbors. As Eckhart Tolle reminds us in The Power of Now, the present moment is all we truly have. Worrying about the future or ruminating on the past pulls us away from the one thing we can control, our awareness of what's right here and now in front of us. Alan Watts echoes this wisdom, suggesting that the future is a concept. It doesn't actually even exist. There is no such thing as tomorrow. There is only now. It's easy to feel powerless in the face of uncertainty or fear-mongering headlines. But what if we approach the season of the holidays and a political changing of the guards with a commitment to presence? What if we let go of fear and instead rooted ourselves in love, connection, and the small, meaningful actions we can take to make this world brighter? As we move into 2025, consider for a moment how you want to use your life force to put more love into this world. This story about Tracy Willis Gates inspires me. Tracy conducted an experiment where she wrote a handwritten letter of appreciation to a different person every day for a year. Her intention was simple: to adopt a daily kindness practice and see if it deepened her connections and brought her more joy. She wrote notes to her coffee shop barista, an elderly neighbor, old friends she hadn't seen in years, and many others she encountered in her daily life. She found that we all crave to know that we matter. Responses to her letters ranged from, "You made my day," or "Your letter changed me." One recipient even said, "I will save your note forever in my special journal. I want my ancestors to find it and read how fabulous I am." It made me cry, and I read it over and over. Tracy's experiment reminds us that small acts of kindness have the power to ripple outward. They deepen relationships, bring joy to both giver and receiver, and remind us of our shared humanity. Even a simple handwritten letter can be a tangible expression of love and connection, a keepsake that transcends the digital noise of our lives. I imagine how I might change if I were really willing to write a note of gratitude to people who voted for soon-to-be President Trump, while also letting go of my belief that my perspective has more merit and is right. I invite you, as we close out this year and celebrate the holidays, to consider putting some healthy boundaries in place around engaging with both the news and social media and letting go of all of our collective worries about what's going to happen, and instead intentionally practice presence and showing up in our world in intentional and connecting ways. After all, this seems to be the season to remind us about what truly matters. Let's leave here today saying no to brain rot and committed to presence, connection, and love. Let's choose to reject the fear that the world so often serves us and instead embody the peace and hope that this season invites. And remember, as Universalist Unitarians, may we always keep love at the center. Can I get an amen?